with information on the latest developments in assistive technology. From the studios of 2RPH in Sydney, RPH Australia brings you AbleQuest. I'm Peter Worthington. Today the program is longer than usual as we continue exploring the use of Botox or botulinum toxin type A in the treatment of debilitating medical conditions. For over 20 years, it has been used therapeutically in a variety of conditions characterized by muscle hyperactivity. It is well proven that injections of Botox, specifically into rigid muscles, can help some patients perform everyday tasks to help them function more independently. In the last edition, we heard how it works as a facilitator in stroke rehabilitation to reduce excessive muscle contraction or spasticity caused by the stroke. Dr. William Hyun, research neurologist at Neuroscience Research Australia, explained that after treating patients with Botox to reduce muscle stiffness, they discovered a change in brain activity as well. Let's listen to a short extract from that interview.
For many years now, as you know, we've been using Botox to treat spasticity in stroke patients. And that's assuming that much of its effects come from its action by paralyzing the injected muscle. So the purpose of this study is really twofold. The first is to determine whether there are any abnormal brain wave activity that may be accounting for the development of this spasticity. And Secondly, whether injecting Botox into the affected arm or leg muscle or both in patients with spasticity can be associated with any alterations in this brain activity. And what's interesting about our findings is that our study showed stroke patients with spasticity had abnormal brain activity, and that after we inject them with Botox, not only do we see the expected improvements in muscle stiffness, but there's also a change in the pattern of brain activity as well.
So why does the effect of Botox on the brain arise?
Well, according to our study, it's suggested that maybe the effects of Botox on the brain can arise either because the toxin travels directly to the brain, and certainly some experimental models using rats have shown this, or because the injected muscles are sending different signals back to the brain, and in that way, changing the way patterns of electrical activity are processed and generated in the area of the brain that governs movement, and that's the area we refer to as the motor cortex. But either way, I think what we found is that Botox treatment in the affected muscle not only improves the muscle disorder in stroke patients, but it also helps restore the normal activity in the brain.
We now move to today's topic, which must surely be one of the most satisfying uses of Botox, the treatment of children with cerebral palsy or CP. As many of you will know, CP is a disorder caused by damage to a child's developing brain, usually before birth, which affects movement. Doctors and therapists are quick to explain that Botox is not a cure for cerebral palsy. While it cannot be used to treat all forms of CP, it can be very effective in treating spasticity, drooling, or urinary difficulties. Botox is most effective for children under the age of 6, and when used in early stages of spasticity, before problems with bone development and deformity set in. Also, neurologists have determined that 0 to 7 years is the critical period for plastic changes in the brain. A landmark US study of the use of Botox for children and adolescents with CP, conducted over 2 years and released in 2011, provided indelible proof of its effectiveness. Dr. Mark DeFazio, who led the research, said, "It's very exciting to see the progress these kids can make. Some of them are able to do more for themselves, like feeding themselves or turning on a faucet or tap. Some were able to hold a pen and write for the first time or use a computer touchscreen to communicate. These may not seem like big changes, but they can be life-changing for those kids and their families." The success of this treatment in physical terms is compounded by the increase in self-confidence experienced by the children. To find out about how Botox is being used here in Australia to treat children with CP, Nikki Lindemann spoke to Brian Hoare. Brian is Senior Occupational Therapist for the Victorian Paediatric Rehabilitation Service at Monash Children's.
So, Brian, thank you for joining us on AbleQuest today and talking about this really interesting subject of Botox. Can we begin with sort of a bit of a definition for our listeners? What is it and what does it do? Botox.
So Botox is a trade name. The drug itself is actually known as botulinum toxin A. So Botox is one brand that was made by a company called Allergan. There's also another drug that does the same, has the same effect, and that's called Dysport, and that's made by another company called Ipsen. So the two products work in patients with brain damage. What often happens, particularly when the motor area of the brain is damaged, you get inconsistent and problems with the input from the nerves to the muscles. Often that results in overactivity, particularly in specific muscles called the flexors. So they're the muscles that sort of tend to clench and curl you up into a ball. It's injected specifically into muscles that need to be targeted, or those overactive muscles, and it stops a neurotransmitter called acetylcholine. And that transmitter, in simple terms, acts to activate the muscle. It passes the signals from the nerve to the muscle itself. So the injection of Botox stops this neurotransmitter from making that connection for a period of time. So in effect, what it does is stop the overactivity at the specific muscle that's been injected.
I'm sure our listeners would be interested in a very quick understanding of whether this Botox, this botulinum that you use, is the same as is used in the cosmetics industry.
Yeah, it is exactly the same product for use across all purposes, including, yeah, the cosmetic industry, which I think would undoubtedly probably be the most popular area or the highest use.
Yes, it's what people would be familiar with. And I've read in the research that some of the cerebral palsy sufferers have actually noticed an improvement in their appearance through the use of Botox.
Probably perhaps a positive side effect. I haven't I have not seen that as I work with children.
Who specifically will benefit from your particular work?
Cerebral palsy, I should probably define. It's a term that describes a group of disorders, predominantly of problems with posture and movement. So children with cerebral palsy have, as I mentioned before, the issues with the control of muscles due to the damage in the motor area of the brain. So there's a range of, or a spectrum within the cerebral palsy diagnosis. So you have children who are very mildly affected, and those children that are quite severely affected, and those perhaps are the children you would see in wheelchairs and are dependent for all their care needs. So botulinum toxin can have an effect, and a positive effect, for children across that whole spectrum. But there's probably different reasons for using the toxin dependent on the presentation of the child. Probably put most basically, there's a group of children who Botox in conjunction with therapy may improve the general function of the child, whether it be upper limb or lower limb. There's also a group, perhaps the more severely impaired children, who Botox can assist in pain management, can assist in maintaining the length of the muscle, which often, because there's so much tightness, they're at risk of the muscles becoming very short, particularly with growth. Also, general cosmesis as well. So for children, particularly with an arm that sort of sits up and bent at the elbow, sort of around their ears, and many of these children are integrated at mainstream schools. That's definitely a valid reason for perhaps choosing to dampen down the overactivity in the muscles that are causing that more cosmetic problems.
If Botox treatment is started early, would it somehow have a longer-term beneficial effect for sufferers?
Yeah, the neurological damage or the brain damage that happens in CP is static or unchanging. However, the secondary complications, being the problems that it causes with the muscles particularly, are changing. And so what we see in terms of the natural progression over time for these kids, that if the muscles remain untreated, then that because the bones are growing at a rapid rate, and perhaps the muscles are fixed or become stuck in shortened positions, that rate of bone growth outstrips the muscle growth. So you end up with perhaps
a sort of deterioration.
So the muscles themselves, say for instance at a joint, say your elbow joint, if you get what's called fixed contracture, the range of movement through that whole range at the elbow might be quite restricted. That becomes problematic for functional reasons, also for children who have carers or reliant on others for dressing, etc. So I've now been involved in the Botox program at Monash Children's now for 12 years. So there are groups of children that have had multiple injections, and that's what I should also say, is that it's generally not a once-off treatment. Most of the children we see, particularly in the early, perhaps early intervention years, so preschool age, would have injections perhaps every 4 to 6 months. And the overarching goal of the use of the Botox, which simply is used to reduce this muscle tightness, is to maintain the muscle length to prevent these secondary complications. So clinically, I can say that from what I've seen in these children is that Botox does have a longer-term effect in terms of maintenance of the range of the movement in the muscles that are injected. Also allows us to keep children who perhaps otherwise wouldn't tolerate splinting, which is another intervention that we use to maintain the muscle length. It assists in maintaining these kids' splinting programs because it dulls down the overactivity while the splints are being used. So, yes, there is definitely a longer-term positive effect.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it hopefully, over time, by the time children do get to, if they've had multiple series of injections, by the time they get to school, what we've noticed is that the amount required significantly decreases, perhaps to once a year, and if that, perhaps goes out to every couple of years.
That's very positive. Okay. Can you give us a very succinct little history of the development of how was it discovered and how did it come to be used in CP?
It goes back quite a long way, but it is the same bacteria or poison that it's been referred to as what you would get from eating certain types of food that culture the botulism bacteria. Mm-hmm. So it was discovered many, many, many years ago. I can't give you the exact dates, but it was first used then in the medical field once it had been purified and the dosages had been established in terms of not causing significant safety concerns. It was first used in the management of issues with the eye, issues such as blepharospasm, which is problems with the movement of the eye, and also with the spasming around the eye. In terms of development over time, it started then to be used for a range of conditions and was first approved in use in children with cerebral palsy in 1999. It was only approved for use at that time for what's called equinus deformity, or basically kids who walk on their tippy toes, particularly because the calf muscles or the muscles of the lower leg become stiff and tight. So it was used predominantly in the early stages for treatment of issues with the leg, and then around about the early 2000s, it was starting to be used in what's called an off-label indication. So it was deemed as safe to be used, but it wasn't funded under the PBS system. And PBS approval was first gained for use in the upper limb or the arms in children with CP in 2009.
You work primarily with the upper body, is that correct?
That's correct.
And what made you decide to do that? Because CP affects the entire body, doesn't it?
It does. So it's a good question, and it's perhaps not consistent across countries and across Australia, but we work within the field of rehabilitation, usually within tertiary level institutions such as Monash Children's. We work in multidisciplinary teams. It's usually headed up by a rehabilitation specialist, mm-hmm. being the medical doctor. Then you have a vast array of team members of various disciplines from physiotherapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, psychology, neuropsychology, etc., and the list goes on and on. So in terms of occupational therapy and why we focus on the arms is that our whole profession is based on being able to give children or adults the ability to maintain their independence in daily life. And in order to maintain independence, you do need effective or optimal hand function. So okay. It's become an area in which occupational therapists really has led the way. The physiotherapist tend to look after the mobility and gait, so
right.
Look after their lower limbs. So that's how this division has been over the last 10 years.
You touched just a moment ago on funding. Can you just give us a quick overview of how your research and your treatment and your clinical work is funded?
The research work I undertook across a two-year period from 2003 to 2009, that was a trial, and a relatively small trial of 34 children that looked at what therapy-based interventions were the most effective following these injections, because what we know was that the injections alone reduce the muscle tightness, but you need it in combination with therapy to improve functional outcomes. So in terms of the funding for that trial, and I should disclose that that was funded, and the Botox particularly was funded by Allergan Australia, and also that paid for some things like the assessment of the children. But more broadly now, Botox is used very widely in most paediatric treatment centres around Australia. We inject, I can tell you from an upper limb point of view at Monash Children's, we inject about 130 arms per year. And that's all funded now through the PBS, the toxin itself. But all the therapy, and this is the exciting thing about particularly in Victoria, is that the state government has funded these multidisciplinary paediatric rehabilitation services. And there are two tertiary level hubs at Royal Children's Hospital in Melbourne and also Monash Children's. And there are also children in the country also have access to more rural hubs. And it's a growing service. But this service now provides all the post-intervention or the post-therapy after the injections. So that's all funded through the state government, through their health budget.
Your research, is it just about functional improvement or does it help with pain and psychological issues that obviously do arise?
So I probably should give you a bit more of a specific idea of the research I conducted. Firstly, yep. The group of children that I looked at was a distinct group of children with what's called unilateral cerebral palsy. And that's the group of children who have one side of their brain that has been damaged, so therefore one side of their body has been affected with in terms of movement and posture. So the common term is that they present with a hemiplegia.
Yeah.
So this group of children have one hand that works very effectively and one hand that doesn't. But in early 2000s, we were starting to look at injections of Botox to manage their muscles. But what we were finding is that just by doing the injections doesn't mean that the child will learn how to use the injected limb. They tend to perhaps go on and start doing things with their good hand or their unaffected hand. That might be okay for very young kids who have parents there and to assist. But as the children get older, that becomes very problematic, particularly if they haven't learned to use the arm at an early stage. So what I looked at was, it wasn't necessarily a study that looked at the use of Botox. It was really to look at what is the best and most effective therapy following the injections. And so I compared one group had a restraint mitt, a little wetsuit mitt that went on the unaffected hand, and that was to try and get the child to use the injected limb as much as possible after the injections. The other group was to look at a two-handed approach, which is traditionally what we do as occupational therapists. So we use activities that promote the use of two hands. And in summary, in very brief, what we found was that the highly intensive constraint therapy was no more superior than the bimanual occupational therapy group. The most exciting thing is that both groups made significant improvements in the way that they used their two hands. Now, that group of children are probably, as I mentioned before, more of the mild end of the spectrum of CP. But so there is the other group where we do use toxin clinically quite a lot for those issues that you mentioned, so for management of pain. And we found that it is actually quite an effective therapy, particularly for limb pain. And also, if you can imagine some children, you've got a tightly fisted hand, fingers and thumb tucked in. If that becomes more and more fixed and more tight, it's very hard to maintain hygiene because your hands tend to sweat quite a bit and it becomes a bit of a care issue and a long-term issue in terms of potential for infection. So we use the toxin, but the toxin alone won't be the answer. You then will need to perhaps consider putting a cast on for a period of time. So the cast is designed to maintain a consistent, sustained stretch on those muscles that have been injected. And then also you need, from an ongoing perspective, a splinting program.
It can be very painful to actually manipulate that kind of a limb with or without Botox.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And what about the psychological ramifications for, let's say, young people rather than kids?
Yeah. This is probably an area that is now where I think the research needs to look at. There's probably limited evidence, but from a clinical perspective, if you think about children who potentially without treatment and effective treatment from an upper limb perspective wouldn't be using their hands together, they would be predominantly doing everything with one hand. In terms of their disability, that also becomes more noticeable, perhaps in a social context, versus if you provide Botox and good therapy at an early stage and these children really are using their hands effectively together. I think from a self-esteem, confidence perspective, that perhaps has a big influence, but I can't say from a research perspective.
Still a bit more to do then.
Yeah,
obviously.
There is. That's the area that needs to look to move into now. Yeah.
So how safe is the use of Botox as a treatment for children, particularly in the long term?
Mm-hmm. So there have been reports of deaths associated with the use of Botox in children. These reports have been reported because Botox has been used at or around the time of the death of the child.
Mm-hmm.
And really it is in this group of children that are more severely affected. So perhaps those children who are what we would consider high need, so they're perhaps in wheelchairs or reliant on wheelchair for their mobility, they perhaps are tube fed, they're at risk, and perhaps they also have multiple hospital admissions throughout the year with perhaps other medical complications. So it's a group of children that are perhaps at high risk, and I also think it perhaps depends on where the injections are going. So if you were to inject perhaps around the salivary glands,
mm-hmm.
which can be used for treatment of drooling, that you are getting closer to muscles perhaps that control breathing and
yeah.
also control swallowing. So there have been reports, but in terms of across the 10 years or sort of more 12 years now of the hundreds of children that I've seen, I haven't seen a significant adverse event. You do get some minor problems such as excessive weakness in the muscle, which can be something that's unwanted. The positive thing about Botox is that it does actually resolve that excessive weakness. It does resolve over time, and perhaps it's only a few weeks. Yeah, and I think in terms of a question we get asked a lot in clinic is there any evidence that the cumulative effect from multiple series of injections causes any problems? And there is no evidence for that. We've had children who have probably had up to 15 injection series across their life, and there's no adverse effects from that.
Mm. Okay, we will have to start drawing this to a close. Unfortunately, it's a really interesting subject.
It is.
What are the future possibilities for the technology and for research, would you say?
I think from a Botox point of view, that the evidence is now there, that is it effective for what it's meant to do, and that's to reduce the muscle tightness. I think the research in this area particularly now focuses on, well, how can we enhance the outcomes even more? We know now that there are some effective therapies, but it's probably more now looking at the therapy side of things rather than the drug itself, and also, as I mentioned before, perhaps the psychosocial issues and also longer-term outcomes. Are there any effects from multiple injections across time?
So lots of scope for further research.
There is indeed.
Can you give our listeners some sources if they want to go into this a little bit more deeply?
Yeah, obviously there's a lot of information out on the internet. My advice is, and in fact for any health intervention, is perhaps the first port of call is what's called the Cochrane Library or the Cochrane Collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
There, that's an online and particularly free to Australians. It's an online library in which researchers have looked at all the best trials that have been published in a particular area,
mm-hmm.
got all the data from those trials, and then come up with a definitive answer as to whether or not the intervention works or not.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good place to start.
Mm-hmm.
There are also the CP Alliance has from New South Wales has information on their website. They're probably the best in terms of understanding and a language that is understandable to everyone. They're probably the best
mm-hmm.
place to go to with the probably most reliable information, I would say.
They have a lot of opportunities to study this anyway with
mm-hmm.
their clients. Brian, thank you so much for your contribution. It's really interesting. I can see that we might have some further programs on AbleQuest dealing with Botox for the treatment of CP. Thank you for taking part.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been fun.
Yeah, it has. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Nikki Lindemann was speaking with Brian Hoare, Senior Occupational Therapist at Monash Children's. In the next edition of AbleQuest, we will address other important aspects of CP therapy aided by the use of Botox. You have just been listening to AbleQuest, a program that looks at developments in assistive technology. I'm Peter Worthington. Thank you for listening, and goodbye till next programme.